WFF with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to you, Chris and Kira. And yes, Chris, I will do my best to get lots of gossip out of Jordan Murphy on Donegal O'Callaghan. It's Wednesday, the 12th of August, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, my old teammate Jordan Murphy, hopefully not a snitch on challenging times with the Leicester Tigers and memorable days like this.
Ireland on the front foot once more, O'Gara, O'Driscoll. He'll be so keen with all this possession to round it off with a try, and maybe Shane Horgan can oblige. Jordan Murphy can. That's out of the top drawer. Ireland have a second try, and Lansdowne Road erupts.
Mark Langdon is with us to reflect on a busy week of European football that's only getting started as well.
Atalanta can't pay the wages or transfer fees the likes of Roma, Milan and Napoli can pay, yet Atalanta have finished above all of them in recent seasons. They're quite happy to go toe-to-toe with any team.
Plus, in a year of doubt, Irish cricket captain Andy Balburnie tells us about his match-winning a century.
Fabulous from Andrew Balburnie, a sixth one-day international 100, and arguably none more important. The chase for World Cup Super League points, the captain has helped his opening batsman to this astonishing partnership and put Ireland on the brink of an historic win.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Donegal, it's been a long nearly 6 months, but you are back in studio.
I'm back in studio, back together. Socially distanced, of course. We're at least 2 metres apart, the size of his desk. So, it's good to be back. Good to see you. It's like going back into your old school. You know, the way it smells the same, looks the same, but it's just a little bit different, isn't it?
There's a lot less people around, but it is actually strange to have you in studio because, you know, we've had so few guests in over the last 6 months, and for such a long time, we were in here and Ruby was in as well, and we were having a bit of crack, and then all of a sudden the rug was pulled out from under everyone. And
it's nice to be around people, isn't it? Just to have the conversations. Like, we probably did the whole show before we started it, if you know what I mean, just having the crack and hopping the ball. So I did find it handy the way there was loads of car parking, though. I was there, oh, a nice one.
What about the canteen? Did you go back in?
Not yet. I haven't braved the canteen. I brought a few snacks with me, so I've made it through. But no, it's good to be back, Marie.
It's good to have you back as well.
Cheers, thanks.
Bit of company. Can't beat it.
Although I do have John Creedon in Cork. That's a big one.
To live up to there.
Certainly is. There's been a lot going on again today, isn't it? Eric Donovan's fight is only around the corner, and a guy that's taken a massive opportunity. We were lucky to chat to him, but I find this guy really interesting. I think he's going to put on an incredible performance because he just seems so hungry, doesn't he?
It's been brilliant. He's been dominating a lot of the news headlines and social media over the last week or so, and a lot of it is to do with his personality. So he's so infectious and so confident, and he's actually been really polite and nice as well, and I think a lot of people are enjoying seeing the build up to a fight and it to be very respectful of the opponent, and both him and Zelfa Barrett that he's fighting had a press conference today and were very nice to each other, which was rare. Will we hear it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Two great teams, two great fighters. I've got to say, this for me may be the standout fight of week three at Fight Camp. Zelfa Barrett, our latest signing, I believe he's going to go on and become a major, major star in Manchester. And Eric Donovan, undefeated, fantastic amateur with, I think, 5 or 6 national titles, 2 European medals in 2009, 2010, ready for his big opportunity. And I think the great thing about this fight is, in the situation we're in with the sport and the world, we know that we have to give compelling fights. Zelfa's first fight with us, we know this was a tough fight, maybe tougher than we would have accepted if it was a little run out in Manchester. But him, Steve and Pat said, we will take it. We believe we're good enough to win this fight. And Eric Donovan said, I'm at that stage in my life. It's time for me to roll the dice. So, Eric, you've talked a great game all week. We know you're here to win with your team. All ready to go on Friday night.
I'm absolutely delighted to be here. Honestly, I'm very grateful for the opportunity. You're dead right. I think in life, if you want to be successful, no matter what, you have to take risks. But you also have to be able to back it up. You have to be good enough and you have to prepare well. When this opportunity was presented to me, I knew that chances and opportunities for me are few and far between where I am at my age and in my career. And nobody had the balls to fight Zelfa at Super Featherweight in Britain. So when Mark put it to me, I said, yes, Mark, I'll step up and I'll take that because I see an opportunity and I see a I believe in myself, and I believe if I can get a good camp, good preparation, that I could actually put in a good performance and win this fight. And so far we have done that. And if I can perform to the best of my ability on Friday night, I think I can do enough to win.
Marie, I love him. Hard, humble, hungry. It's just everything you want out of an Irish boxer. And I just think it's a lesson to anyone in sport or anything, just to be ready. And that's all he talks about, his opportunity. He knows he's been given one, but it's been able, being ready one, but then to grasp it. And I saw an interesting tweet from Gavin Casey in the 42 today about Katie Taylor, who was chatting about Amanda Sarando basically avoiding her. So the way I'm so used to seeing Katie being so humble and nice, and she was very nice about her, but she basically filleted her and just said, you've been avoiding me.
It was the way she delivered it as well, which was fascinating, because when you're listening to her, she's in the same tone that she always uses. You know, she didn't raise her voice, she didn't say anything, you know, she didn't use any bad words or anything too negative. She just laid out the facts, and the way that she laid them out just illustrated perfectly how Amanda Serrano had just completely avoided any major fight. So she got her message across without having to trash talk either. It was brilliant.
It's the best way to do it, isn't it? She was just, I'd say it would hurt more coming from Katie Taylor, because you possibly know it's the truth, don't you? You're there, she means that. So she's up in a few weeks' time, and we're looking forward to seeing it. So we all wish Eric the best of luck on Friday night. It should be incredible, and we're looking forward to him. He feels like a friend of the show.
He is, and we'll be previewing that fight tomorrow with Gavin Casey of the 42 as well. And just a little bit of other news today. It's great to have some squad announcements, and there was a women's rugby team squad announcement today. So Adam Griggs named 3 uncapped players in a group of 36 for the rescheduled Women's Six Nations games against Italy and France. So Shannon Toohey, Niamh Jones and Katie O'Dwyer are included, and they'll be hoping to get their first senior appearance. So Ireland are going to host Italy on the 24th of October and then head to France the following week. With all of this though, it's like, fingers crossed, hopefully this all will happen. But one name that I know would have caught a lot of people's eyes was Hannah Terrell is on there, and she was on the show only a little while ago talking about her hopes for 15. So she is on the way anyway, which is absolutely brilliant.
And it's the start of our run in towards, of course you can't take Italy for granted, but those 36 players, you would think that's what we're looking towards for Rugby World Cup and trying to get us to New Zealand. So we kind of hope that group can gel and start getting a bit more time together and get all the assistance they need to make sure they're at that World Cup and that they can put their best foot forward at it.
A little bit more positive news as well today, just from the lockdown counties. Laois, Offaly and Kildare soccer teams were able to return to moderated training. The FAI lifted its suspension of activities in those three counties. They won't be able to play any games, and they're going to have to adhere to social distancing rules, but 15 people will be allowed to train together. So I know there was a lot of discontent about the fact that for a while there it looked like sport was going to be suffering in those counties as well, but at least they're able to train anyway, which is something. Getting the physical activities, which we've spoken about it on several occasions, how important it is, and especially during lockdown. But it is interesting times ahead, I think, around the country over the next few months as we see the way COVID plays out and how it affects sport and, of course, health as well. And there's going to be no fans at Augusta. I suppose that was kind of really, you'd expect that. But it has been confirmed that there won't be any, and that is going to take place in November 12th to 15th. Look, who knows, things might change, but I don't think golf without fans is too bad at all. I don't know about rugby without fans, Donica.
Yeah, well, we're going to see very soon. I think Rory McIlroy would agree with you, Marie. I'd say he'd kill for a few supporters. And I think there's certain players, we were chatting about them, the likes of James Lowe, Simon Zeebo. Maybe Rory McIlroy is one of those people that just need the big day, the big stage, that people looking on, the pressure, and unfortunately in a COVID world it's hard to get that type of pressure. But viewing golf at the moment is still brilliant, so I'm there, play away, lads.
I agree. I find it, I think the mind kind of plays tricks in you as well though, like that you can watch something and you know, you kind of nearly forget that there is no fans there. Maybe it's because now I'm kind of used to listening to the crowd now who's been piped in and that, but
better man task than Andy Balburnie later on. Obviously, they played 3 one-day test matches, so he'll be able to give us an insight into it. And Jordan Murphy's on in a little bit, chatting about Leicester, who returned to action this weekend. So they'll all have a good insight into what it's like playing on those Big stages with no one there.
And last night, I think the Cork City player Dananga, who scored a very late goal to send his team through in the FAI Cup action that was on, he didn't need the crowds. He had an absolutely brilliant celebration afterwards, and you could tell that, you know, how much it meant to him to score a goal for Cork City. And even watching back the clip, I don't think you'd really notice that the crowds weren't there because the celebrations were so wild. So I am looking forward to seeing a few rugby celebrations, and we can talk to Jordan Murphy about how they plan to manage that when action does come back again.
Well, there was no better man for finishing, to be fair to him. He was honestly, without doubt, one of the most skillful players that was ever on a pitch with. Just in training, Jordy could light it up. He only weighed, I was looking at his weight today, 87 kgs. Like, I'll be honest, he wouldn't make an under-12s team at 87 kgs nowadays. But he just showed that if you've a skill set, if you're, and that was his thing. I'm looking forward to chatting to him about it, because I think we see a new avenue for rugby players. It all has to be these academies and stuff. Jordy was a footballer, so I'll be interested in his take now as a director of rugby at Leicester. Can players still come through the avenue he did?
Okay, well, we will be talking to him shortly. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to chat Champions League.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. Donika, we have a text in for you. Why is it that our under-20s are not allowed to compete in the Six Nations? Making it nice and hard for you. That's Paul in Sligo.
That's Paul in Sligo. I don't honestly know. I think, I suppose, that you look at the priority, and I'll be honest, everyone's interested in getting the senior game up and running, and that's the most important thing. There is going to be avenues for younger players, because there's hopefully going to be so much international rugby that they will get to fill in with their provinces.
It's kind of a catch-22, really, is that on one end you don't have that platform that, you know, might have been a springboard into the shop window, as we like saying, recently. But then the other side, as you said, there are going to be lots of other games. There are players that are going to be going off to international duty, and there will be opportunities. So it'll be all about trying to take them.
And look, I'm kind of glad of it. Sometimes they use the 20s championship and even the World Cup to trial new rules, and I think it's really unfair to that group or that level. They just want to see, can they change things in the game, and they use the under 20s as nearly guinea pigs for it. So look, there's plenty of opportunities, there's plenty of good players. We were chatting about the second row injuries at the moment. If you're some of those under 20s lads, it's time to act, get in your province and take your opportunity.
Okay, well, now let's turn our attention to football. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Mark Langdon, digital football editor with the Racing Post, and I'm also delighted to say that it is Champions League quarter final night. Who would have thought it, that it's happened? It's here, Mark. Big night tonight, because it's going ahead. Champions League quarter final stage, Atalanta and PSG. So it's nice to have it anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there was a time, wasn't there, sort of March and even early April, there wouldn't have been many people that would have bravely predicted that could have got to this stage, and it was, you know, safe enough, and they could find a path to complete the Champions League. I mean, they were always desperate to do so for many different reasons, including financial ones. But from a sporting point of view, I mean, this is it's a great tournament. I think the already seen that with the Europa League, sort of this sort of mini, almost like an international tournament already. I think adding something extra to it, and these are two teams that are probably, you know, will believe they're in the right side of the draw, away from Manchester City, away from Barcelona, away from Bayern Munich, with a real opportunity to not only win this game, but also therefore, you know, go all the way to the final.
The Italians have been a real revelation this season. Like, they're sensational at attacking play, really. Do you think they're going to stick with that now and try and go all out and win against PSG?
Yeah, I don't really think that Gasperini's team can play any different. They've scored 98 goals in Serie A this season. This is uncharted territory for them. I mean, it's the first time in the Champions League, never mind at the quarterfinals. But you have a look at nearly all of their performances sort of this season. They've always played on the front foot. It was only a couple of weeks ago they went to Turin, outplayed Juventus. They gave away two soft handball penalties that enabled Juventus to equalise. But in terms of football played, Atalanta were miles better than Juve. Papu Gomez, a kind of traditional Argentinian sort of number 10 playmaker type, quite lazy at times, very languid in his style, but absolutely beautiful in terms of the way that he gets the team to play through him, and he dictates the play fantastically well. They are missing some very important players, Atalanta. Ilicic scored a lot of goals for them this season. He's back home for personal reasons, and Gollini, the goalkeeper, is also sidelined. Now, of course, Paris have got their own injury problems, but they have got a bigger squad, and Atalanta's sort of their squad is the key question mark for me. Can they sort of overcome those absentees?
I think the PSG team news will be quite interesting with Ferrari, Di Maria, and potentially Mbappe unlikely to start as well.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a massive shock were Mbappe to be in the starting 11. I think it's a surprise that he's even fit enough possibly for the bench, given that he was only a sort of week or so ago was ruled out for up to 3 weeks. And, they were talking about him maybe not being able to play in the semi-finals or the final. Di Maria suspended as well. And Verratti, somebody that really makes Paris play in midfield. They've got a lot of defensive-minded midfielders. Idrissa Gueye, who was formerly of Aston Villa and Everton. Marquinhos, the centre-back, sometimes plays in midfield as well. Hander Herrera could get a start. The former Manchester United player. All very kind of dogged and defensively disciplined players. Verratti's the one that gets on the ball and gives it to Icardi and to Neymar and Sarabia, who's likely to be the front three for Paris. So it's a very interesting game and not ideal, I think, that both teams go into such a big one missing key elements, but you would say that Paris off the bench have probably got sort of the more players that could make an impact if it sort of decided late on.
Mark, we've seen how important that is, especially with knockouts. You know, we say Man United, Wolves last night. Who do you think Paris are best placed then if it is to, you know, move on in even into extra time or just to get the result in a kind of knockout game?
Yeah, I think that probably does suit PSG, particularly if Mbappe's able to come on, even if it's for 10-15 minutes against tired legs. I mean, that could be a frightening prospect for the Atalanta players, who've not played for a couple of weeks, and you wouldn't want Mbappe running at you sort of, minute one, never mind in sort of minute 91. So it's, somebody like that could be massively influential. Julian Draxler, somebody who's barely sort of mentioned these days at Paris, such is the depth of quality of their squad, it is sort of another one that could come on. In terms of Atalanta, they don't sort of, to use a sort of cricketing term, they don't bat anywhere near as deep in terms of their order. Malinovsky is an exciting Ukrainian player that sometimes comes off the bench, and someone like Luis Muriel as well, the South American forward. But in comparison to what Paris have got, if there is to be a big concern for Atalanta, I think that would be it. And players are bound to get tired. It's been an extraordinarily long season, and we have seen late goals, as you mentioned there, Manchester United in extra time. Sevilla did Wolves right at the end of that game last night. So that should suit Paris, I think.
And then tomorrow we have RB Leipzig against Atletico Madrid. Coronavirus, I mean, we're on to the second game now, and then it's come up in conversation. So Atletico had two players testing positive before the game. How do they cope with this?
I suppose the proof will be in the pudding, really. We'll see after the game. In terms of how they cope for the starting 11, I think probably Correa may well have been in. So from that point of view, it's a blow. I don't think Vasalco would have played anyway. It did mean a disruption in terms of their travel plans. But I think they've been, the Spanish players and the sort of the English and the German ones, they've been used to living this kind of lifestyle now for a while, and the test and trace that's in place. And it was actually extra testing that found these sort of cases, really, because Atletico Madrid, by UEFA sort of rules, didn't have to test every day. It was just 72 hours before the match, but they were sort of just sticking to what La Liga had put in place, which was testing every day, and that was able to kind of pinpoint the two players before It even got to the stage where UEFA needed to get involved. It's not an ideal situation, but they have tested everybody else since, and they've all, it's all come back negative. So look like isolated cases. Of course, I think the UEFA rule is that if you've got 13 players available, then you have to play the game. If you can't fulfil the fixture, then you know, by their laws, and I'm not sure quite how they would work this for such a big game, but by their laws, you'd have to forfeit the fixture. But thankfully, Atletico not got into that situation.
Barcelona also had a player test positive, but it was a fringe player not involved in the Champions League squad. They play Bayern Munich on Friday, and it's really strange to be talking about Barcelona heading into a Champions League game and not being favourites.
No, and I mean, they are, you know, for Barcelona sort of standards, reasonably big underdogs. To be honest, I think they could be even considered bigger ones, and it's probably only their reputation that's kind of giving sort of people this opinion that they've got a realistic chance of beating Bayern Munich. Outside of Lionel Messi, I don't really see anything in what we've sort of come to see from Barcelona over the last couple of months to suggest that they're capable of ending Bayern Munich's 18-match winning streak. I suppose the way that football is, you never know, and that these winning runs can't go on forever. But, you know, they're the kind of reasons that you're coming up with to think that Barcelona could cause the upset. On everything we've seen in terms of the way the two teams play, Bayern Munich are considerably better. They dealt with Chelsea very comfortably in the last 16. Hansi Flick, the coach, has done wonders since he replaced Kovac in the job back in November. In fact, in December, Bayern Munich was seventh in the Bundesliga. They ended up winning it pretty easily. They've done the double. He hasn't changed that much, really, apart from the attitude and I suppose the way he wants the team to play. He wants them to be very aggressive, very modern, and they press from the front. The one person he's probably changed in terms of the team is bringing Thomas Muller back into the side at the expense of somebody like Coutinho in the number 10 position. And Muller has been brilliant. And Robert Lewandowski's been the hottest striker in Europe in terms of goals scored. But I'm pretty sure a large proportion of that is down to the work that Muller does inside the box, creating space for others. Such a clever player. He's somebody not everybody loves, and he seems to score fluky goals all the time. But it can't be that sort of lucky if you keep on doing it. And I think that Muller has been a big reason behind Bayern's renaissance this season.
Mark, it's probably the tie of the round, isn't it? Two massive clubs going head-to-head. How do you see in fair note that Barcelona-Bayern game?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it was anything other really than a Bayern win. Barcelona beat Napoli on Saturday. It was 3-1, but it was one of the most unconvincing 3-1s you could wish to see. Messi scored a fantastic goal. There was a really stupid penalty that Napoli gave away. But in terms of general play, Napoli were the side sort of asking all the questions and playing all of the football. And Mertens missed a very good chance when it was 0-0. He scuffed the shot and it hit the post. They hit the woodwork twice in total. They had a goal rightly ruled out for offside, but it was very marginal. They just give up too many opportunities, Barcelona. For a top team, I'm not sure how they stopped Lewandowski. The likes of Piqué and Busquets probably not got they're not getting any better, let's put it that way. And particularly Piqué and Longley at centre half have been vulnerable all season long, and they're coming up now against the best striker in Europe this season in Robert Lewandowski.
And Mark, on Saturday then, Manchester City are taking on Lyon. How do you think Pep is going to approach this game, knowing that they failed to beat them in the two meetings last year?
Yeah, it was really interesting last season, because Lyon were the better team, and not many sides go to the Etihad and sort of outplay Man City, and they did at times. It was a really enterprising performance from Lyon, but what you would say is that on that occasion, that Nabil Fekir, he's not there anymore. Tanguy and Ndombele, the Tottenham record signing, hasn't done very well in the Premier League. He was brilliant against City on that occasion. So it's a weaker Lyon team. I still think that Guardiola will give them a lot of respect, and he'll probably talk them up in the press conference on Friday and mention mention how good they were last season, but they came through against a poor Juve team, I think, in the last 16, Lyon. Kakare and Aouar in midfield are capable of keeping possession and sort of looking for that pass up to Memphis Depay, and Lyon will look to sort of hit on the counter-attack. But if you look player for player on the two teams, Manchester City are better in just about every position, and the fact that they played so well without Sergio Aguero against Real Madrid, I think Pep Guardiola will probably keep it pretty similar in terms of team selection to what we saw against Real Madrid, and that could mean another start for Phil Foden.
Mark, there's surely a better mindset with Man City after, you know, Liverpool picking up the league and not performing as well as they'd like. Do you think both Pep and the team itself, you know, it's theirs to lose? This is a big one that everyone's watching and hope they can make happen, finally win something big in Europe.
Yeah, I think that actually is probably, it could be their downfall. It feels like it's been their downfall in recent years. The pressure of, you know, trying to conquer Europe, and, you know, with every year that you don't do it, people say, you know, you've got to win it this year, and you've got to win it this year. And, you know, last year they absolutely chucked it away against Spurs at the quarterfinal stage, giving away sloppy goals. I think it feels like the team is sort of more ready, I think, to win the Champions League this time around. They couldn't have wished for a better quarterfinal draw than Lyon. The semi-final, which likely to be, and they've both got to win, of course, first in the last eight, but the semi-final against Bayern Munich will feel like a final, I think, to both teams. Them and Bayern will feel like they're the two best teams in Europe, and it doesn't always work out that the best team wins the Champions League, but this feels like a really big opportunity for Manchester City and for Guardiola, because people, rightly or wrongly, will state the fact that Guardiola has only ever won the Champions League when he's had Lionel Messi in the team, and it's a lot easier to win it with Messi in the team than when he's not in it.
So give us your four teams then that are going to progress. And this is going to be important.
I think you have to play it pretty obvious at this stage, unfortunately. I will go for Paris. I think Atletico Madrid as well, just be too, the nous of them defensively, too good for Leipzig. Bayern Munich to beat Barcelona pretty comfortably, and I'd say the same for Man City against Lyon. I apologise for being predictable, but I do think the four favourites will probably go through.
Safe, I like it. Mark Langdon of The Racing Post, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Game on 2FM. With Green Fern, the nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. The Community Shield at Wembley will be a historic doubleheader this year, with the women's game taking place before the men's showpiece on the 29th of August. Chelsea will face Manchester City before Liverpool and Arsenal do battle at the famous stadium, which is very, very positive news indeed.
Yeah, super news. Great to see, isn't it? It just makes sense for all the big games going forward. Speaking of big games, Marie, this weekend, rugby returns in England. We've seen it in New Zealand and Australia, but as we've all known, there's massive Irish interest. The likes of Gerry Flannery, Sean O'Brien are over there, John Muldoon.
I've been following Sean on Instagram. He's doing a lot of training.
Oh, is he? Well, he's posting a lot about him training.
That's true,
on
actually, yeah.
There's one man that's been there for all of it and has been phenomenal for his club, the Leicester Tigers, both as a player and now the director of rugby. And I'm delighted my former teammate, Jordan Murphy, joins us. Jordy, how are you?
I'm going well, Dunica. How are you keeping?
I'm good. I hear you pulled over at the side of the road. Are you safe?
I am. I'm perfectly safe. You'll be glad to hear I pulled over in a beautiful little village on the way home.
Okay, of course. Jordy, how are you getting on? I know it's been difficult, but return to play, return to action. There's been, you must be excited heading to play Exeter this weekend.
Yeah, very excited. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes over the course of COVID. We finished in early March, and we didn't really know how long that layoff was going to be, and I think all of the players, for the first time in my long time being involved in rugby, were very excited to get back to training, and then, you know, we almost had to encourage them to calm down when we started, and that we started with social distancing training, and then sort of they very quickly went to trying to knock lumps out of each other. So it was it's been a long wait, longest that a lot of people have had without playing rugby or without being at a live rugby match, and I think everyone's really excited about this weekend.
Jordan, I'm going to ask you a question that I'm sure all rugby players hate, because it's the question that everybody asks when they go into an Ireland camp, and it's what's the mood like around the camp? But I actually mean it this time. I do care, because there's so much going on with the pandemic and the finances and no crowds, and as you said, players coming back in after a long time out. Like, what's the atmosphere and the mood like in the club when you take into account everything that's going on?
Look, I think the mood in our club, I can only speak for Leicester, is very good, and the lads are very excited. You know, we've had a strange summer. We have had wage reductions, we've had players leave, and we've signed in some new guys who have yet to arrive. We've very much been left with a group of players that really wants to be here, and we've seen that sort of reflect in the training. We needed to be at a higher standard and a higher level. You know, we've let things slip for a few years, and we brought in a new coaching team, and they've been really driving that. We brought in some big names from across the globe to get us back training to a level that will help us compete at the top end, and the players have been hugely impressive by the way they've got stuck in, and I think, you know, actually a guy Gunnica knows is Aled Walters, is the former Springbok strength conditioning coach. He's Welsh, but he spent some time in Munster. He's been a hugely impressive signing for us.
It's such a difficult time, though, and I don't think anybody could be prepared at all for everything that happened and the consequences of the pandemic as well. But I'd imagine you've had to have an awful lot of difficult conversations over the last few months, Jordan.
Yeah, a huge amount. I think that's been probably the toughest thing. You know, when you've been at a place for a very long time, you have some very good friends, and you know, we made 31 redundancies, and that fell on my shoulders to deliver that news in places, and that was a tough thing to do, having never experienced something like that before. You know, luckily the club supported me in that, and sort of was given some advice and some help in that. But you know, that's tough. And I suppose, you know, not very many people have been through a pandemic before, and we certainly got things wrong as a club. And me as an individual, I certainly got things wrong as well. But I think everyone was endeavouring to get things right and trying to do the right thing and trying to get us through it. And it wasn't like we could turn to anyone for advice on how it was going to pan out. We were completely in the dark and trying to sort of feel our way through it in the right way. So I think one of the most important things for Leicester to do as a club was try to be as open and transparent as possible, as early as possible, and that's something that we sort of said we would do throughout all of the downtime, and it was something that we did.
Jordy, that must be really difficult for you. I know that you got help and support, but telling 31 people that their jobs are gone. I know we chat about and an awful lot is made about the players' salary being reduced, and look, we might have different views on it, but I know from a player's point of view, we see it as kind of compensation for what they're going to put their body through in time. But it must have been really hard, especially when you're losing some of your major talent that you brought through.
Yeah, look, it was difficult, and we lost 31 members of staff, and both at Welford Road and Oval Park, which is our training facilities. Now that didn't all fall on my shoulders to deliver that news. I think, you know, sort of the performance staff was more my remit, and so there was six or seven people that I had to speak to. You know, we lost players amongst that, and I think that was a really difficult balancing act, because it's really tough from a player's point of view, as you know, because you go out there and you put your body on the line week in, week out, and you know, you deserve to get paid, and the rugby players don't get paid what footballers get paid. And you know, it's a difficult job. But then you balance that with, you know, people from the ticketing office losing their jobs are being made redundant, and the salaries are a lot less, and the way they handle themselves throughout that sort of process was hugely impressive and pretty humbling. You know, I think it was. There was a lady who went with a young child, and you know, sort of in the process, she said, "Oh, you know, it must be really difficult to deliver this news," and I totally understand it. And people just really show their true colours in tough times, and I think we were very, very lucky that, you know, we've got some great people, and we've had to let some great people go, but I know they'll go on, you know, strong from strength to strength.
It must be hard, Jordan, knowing as well that we're not through it yet and that there is still so much uncertainty about what's coming down the track, and when you look at the importance of crowds and just not knowing when you're going to have that income again, and even just trying to plan for next season, which will come around very, very quickly.
Yeah, look, I think that was one of the things. Leicester Rugby is a PLC, so, you know, we basically saw the problems very, very early. You know, we have one of the biggest supporter bases in the UK, and we generally have 24,000 people through the gates, and we're hugely proud of that. But obviously, when you can't have fans through the gate, that impacts on you immediately, and we sort of were losing money hand over fist, and it was really important that we made the changes very, very early in order to stabilise. As you say, the uncertainty over what happens down the line is daunting, because, you know, you just can't predict. But we have to sort of do what the best thing for the club is, and you know, I think we're all on board with trying to do that.
You try to create tradition, history, but money's important in the game now, Jordy, isn't it? Especially like when we competed, you look at the likes of Perpignan, Biarritz, those types of teams. But now, if you've deep pockets, it helps.
Look, you don't very often see the top teams not being the richest. You know, there are anomalies, but money certainly does talk. I read an interview by Steve Diamond earlier in the week, and you know, he sort of said, "What was the transformation in Sale?" And he simply put it down to money and being able to afford the top players and be able to do that. Salary caps in England are coming down, which is going to make it more challenging, and in theory, will make it a level playing field. For us as a club, we've got a very proud tradition. You know, obviously Leicester Tigers have been around since the 1800s, 1880, I believe, and we've been through some peaks and troughs, and you know, we've got to go back to what makes us strong, and sort of that local community feeding through into the team is something that we have to do.
Just on that point, one of your local ones that you brought through, Manna, to Alanghi, and you mentioned Steve Diamond. Obviously, it must have been disappointed to see someone that you brought up through the ranks moving on to Sale.
Yeah, it's always disappointing to lose a player of Manu's stature, but it was, you know, very much Manu's decision. We were in a situation, as I said, where, you know, the club was really worried about survival, and Manu sort of chose the option to go to Sale. So it's disappointing, but you know, we wish him the very best of luck in his rugby career. A lot of the guys are looking forward to playing against him and hopefully catching up with him post game and being able to socialise with him. But I believe he's been training very well at Sale, so, you know, wish him very best of luck.
He's probably one of the few people who'll be happy enough not having the crowd there when he goes back.
Possibly.
When you mentioned the calibre of people you're getting in, and you mentioned Alan Waters, I know from my time with him in Munster, a phenomenal coach that will get real buy-in from the players. But Steve Bortwick, everything you hear about him, maybe you might give us a bit of insight into that decision and how he's going.
Yeah, look, about a year and a half ago, I sort of looked at the areas that I was deficient in, and Steve Bortwick is incredibly, incredibly detailed in everything he does. I've been lucky enough to watch him coach a few times with England, and obviously his reputation was second to none. Having spoken to him, I was convinced that he was the right man for the job at Leicester. He drives incredibly high standards. He's incredibly detailed to the nth degree. It was really an easy decision to try and get him involved. And he's been, again, alongside Aled, huge for us throughout this pre-season.
It's amazing that you're turning to someone like Bortwick to bring that type of steel to the Leicester outfit, isn't it? It's something that you always associate with the Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, obviously Steve, he's done it at a high level. He's done it for England for a numerous amount of years. He's worked with some great coaches. He's grown hugely in his time as well. And at the right time for him to make the step to being a head coach was that now. So he's, as I said, he's been brilliant since their arrival.
Jordy, I've played over there, and I probably didn't give the Prem the respect it deserves. It's so attritional, it's so hard to play in, everything's a competition, but this is a sprint now. 9 games and it's all over, and it's already decided Saracens are going down. What are the aspirations for you in those 9 games?
Look, it's a very difficult one because we don't want to damage the players. As you said, there isn't a huge amount on the season, and that relegation is done and dusted. So we will use it as a campaign, really. And you know, we haven't had any pre-season fixtures, and we've got 10 guaranteed games, and one of those is a European quarter. So we're going to use it to build the players' fitness and stamina and ability to, you know, get out there and sort of see what our game plan looks like going forward. And then we'll have some additions over the course of the rest of this season. We've got some guys coming from New Zealand, from Argentina. new additions to the team, which will bolster the ranks and hopefully put us in a better place.
Jordy, we were lucky, I was lucky when we were playing that we'd get to break and get a rest week, whereas every time you were jumping back on a flight to play for Leicester, I was looking at your caps for Leicester, 316 caps, it's incredible. I know we go on so much about the player welfare in Ireland, but do you think it nearly wraps our players in a bit of cotton wool?
There's 322 donors. Don't do those other six, Dan. I won't. No, look, it is what it is. As you say, it's a very different competition. You know, the way the Irish lads are looked after is something I was always hugely envious of. Having to sort of go out and play hurt on occasions was something that isn't good for any player. And certainly, I think most of the guys who had, you know, big or long careers in the Premiership have had to do that. You know, the season's 30, 36, maybe 40 games long, and you sort of sometimes find yourself racking up into the 30s of games alongside any representative stuff that you do. So it is a different competition, and certainly you see that on occasions. You know, some of the big games that are most disappointing games that I was involved with as a Leicester player were games where, you know, we played Premiership quarter-final, semi-final, final, and then found ourselves in a European final, which is, you know, incredibly difficult to back up games like that. But it is what it is. You know, I always knew that was sort of what I was going to be expected to do, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every minute of it. So I when I can't walk in a few years, I'll probably regret it. But there you go.
Jordy, I was slagging early on for weighing 87 kgs and that I just don't think it would happen anymore. But just for you, do you think that pathway is still there for a natural footballer like yourself, or has the game moved on?
It's moved on a little bit. I think guys are bigger, certainly bigger. But, you know, I think there's still the avenue for the 90 kilo players and the guys who have pace and have an ability to do things a different way. You know, I think that's the joys of rugby, is that it's a game for every shape and every size, and you know, I think, you know, your teammate Peter Stringer will testify to that. It's a great game for that reason, and you know, you can find a way to get it done, and I suppose that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I suppose I need to ask you, because everyone goes on about the memories of the Grand Slam in 2009, and everyone will remember Tommy Bowles' brilliant try or Rogers' drop goal. The bit that I can never get out of my head is you not wanting to put the ball off the pitch. I remember shouting and roaring at you, and you just loving that moment, loving that it's, you know, that the game's in the mix, and you just didn't want to finish it.
No, it wasn't actually that, Dunners, to be quite honest. When Stephen Jones was lining the kick up, he had about a minute and 3 or 6 seconds on the clock. So I was conscious that he had to kick it before a minute. And I knew when I caught the ball, it was probably around 3-4 seconds on the clock. So I was trying to make sure that there wasn't a restart. If you touched that down straight away and there's 4 seconds on the clock, I thought you give the referee an avenue to restart it. So I was going to run it into the corner. And then when I got to that corner, I was going to turn around and run it to the other corner until I saw 0-0 on the clock. But I think everyone got a bit excited thinking I was going to run it from deep. I know I've been accused of some madness in my time, and I think the whole Irish squad and half the stadium was screaming at me. But it wasn't my finest moment to boot it into the third row of the stands, to be quite honest. It was probably a naive move.
No, it was a special day, and it was great that you were able to enjoy it. Special times that we really enjoyed. Jordy, do you miss it?
Look, you miss days like that. I suppose days like that are memories that you'll take with you till your very last day. It's a, you know, the camaraderie really is something that you really miss. And I think guys who have finished really struggle. You know, I think when you're going to work we call it work, but effectively it's play. When you turn up on a daily basis and you're surrounded by your friends and you have experiences like that on the weekend where, you know, you get to go in to as near as a battle without a bullet being fired as possible, and you get to make great memories, you get to rely on people to dig you out of a hole, you make great friendships, and there's always a great, you know, bit of crack going on, and then all of a sudden it's gone, and I think that's the toughest thing for players who finish. You know, you can obviously elaborate on that more, and I'm sure that's a nice story for you to do down the line, but it's a great memories. We were very, very lucky to do what we loved doing for as long as we did, and you know, I consider myself lucky to still be involved in it now, but I don't think there'll be anything quite like being a player.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. Jordy, we'll have to leave you go, but just before you do, I'd love to get your insight. Of course, Leo Cullen, a former teammate of yours, you come across Saracens the whole time. Who do you think will come out on top in that Champions League game?
I think Leo is an astute operator. I had some great conversations with him over lockdown, and I think Leinster will have too much for them.
Okay, Jordy, fingers crossed. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Mind yourself and best of luck this weekend.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million.
Thanks.
Game On 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Fabulous from Andrew Balburnie, a sixth one-day international 100, and arguably none more important. The chase for World Cup Super League points. The captain has helped his opening batsman to this astonishing partnership and put Ireland on the brink of an historic win.
Game on 2FM.
Now, just over a week ago, the Ireland cricket team beat the World Cup holders England on their own patch, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by one of the heroes of the day, the Irish cricket captain, Andy Balburnie. Andy, how are things?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
Good. I'd say it's been a pretty nice week, has it, for you, just reflecting on that day?
Yeah, it has. I mean, we haven't been able to do a lot more, so we're able to reflect on it and kind of enjoy the moment. And, you know, it's a message that I said to the group after the game, is these are the moments you play for, and it's our job to do it as regularly as we can and make sure that we're in those winning situations as often as we can.
Okay, so we're all happy sitting back on the couch watching that. What's it like to play in it?
I suppose it's non-stop. You're playing, you know, the best team in the world, and it's very tough, and that's the kind of top level cricket we play at now. It's very enjoyable when it goes well, don't get me wrong, but the two games leading into it that didn't go well, so our job is to go out and put in a performance in the third game, and we managed to do that. I suppose when you're chasing 330 a total like that, you don't really have anything to lose. You just got to go out and try to get it, and fortunately we were able to do it that day.
So just from a captain's role point of view, so the first two games didn't go to plan. What do you do then? Like, what's your role to try and get the team ready and to actually be able to pull off something like that, to turn around like that?
Look, there's not a lot you can do in the short space of time that we had, technical-wise. You know, we're not going to change our techniques in between games, but what we've got to do is go out with the right attitude and you've got to make it like that whenever you do play those games. So we managed to do that. We managed to get the attitude thing right. We spoke about it, but it's one thing speaking about it, but we managed to put it into action in the game. There was periods in the first innings where the game was getting away from us and we managed to pull it back. So it was a huge credit to the group, and to finish a long enough tour like that was very pleasing.
Andy, the role, like, it's all consuming, isn't it, with selecting the order, like you're saying, motivating the players, but then your own performance. I think that was something, you know, in the last game, you led by example with your performance.
Yeah, and that's something that's probably been the toughest transition, I'd say, from player to captain, is that, you know, first and foremost, I'm a batsman and I need to score runs, but, you know, when you're not scoring runs, and you do feel a bit more pressure as your captain, because, you know, you want to do your talking and your leading with the bat, but when it's not going your way, you've got to make sure that you find ways to get that ticking, and then the rest sort of falls in place. But I've got good people around me, a great coach in Graham Ford and some brilliant senior players. So, you know, you do go through those times as a sportsman when you doubt that, like, that's part of it, but it's important that you do save it the days like that, and it sort of gives you a reminder that, you know, it's actually okay and you can do it at this level.
You're new in the role of captain as well. We had you on back in January when you took over, and then you've had some really good days out already with the West Indies and then England as well. Do you feel you're starting to put your stamp on the team now?
I think so. I think the guys who are involved know what we're trying to do as a team. You know, one of the main goals for us is to qualify for the 2023 World Cup, and those games last week, you know, each had 10 points to go towards that. So that was huge for us. And look, 2020 has been a massive year in terms of what's gone on in the world and the lack of sport. But when we have had those chances to go out and play, we've put in really good performances, and performances that kind of reassure that we're going in the right direction, and what we're doing in practice and in every day is all going in the right direction, and that's for that kind of World Cup down the line in T20, and then the 2023 World Cup in India.
Andy, something that always annoyed me in my sport is when people mention transition, and it's something that happens with your team as well. But maybe tell us about some of the younger lads that are coming through that you're excited about.
Yeah, it's a very exciting time. It always is when you get kind of new guys coming into the setup and they bring that sort of excitement. Not that you don't lack it yourself, but sometimes you go through moments where you're struggling a bit and you get a couple of young guys who are exuberant and express themselves, and it is refreshing. And you know, we've had a golden generation of Irish cricket over the last 10 or 15 years, guys who have got us in the position we are in now. So, you know, they are getting older, but they're still a part of this squad. So it's important that we find the balance of bringing in these young guys and exposing them to the, you know, there was no one at the ground last week, but there was over 100 million people watching it on TV. And the experience that those guys will get from that, you know, only having played 3 or 4 games for the country is going to be huge down the line.
So what's next for you then, Andy?
Well, we've got another week of doing not a lot, and then after that we have our domestic cricket setup starts, the interprovincial stuff with the 4 teams. It's mainly going to be white ball cricket just because of the time frame, and unfortunately we don't actually have any scheduled internationals until January. So, you know, I've got a couple of things to do, whether it's kind of online courses or work experience for some of the guys to get involved with before Christmas, so that we're ticking that box and then hopefully hit the ground running come the new year.
Well, that's hard, Andy, isn't it? Like, such a long time away, really.
It is, and that's the most difficult thing, is that we've had, you know, it's strange, we haven't had a lot of cricket, but we've had a really good year. We've won 3 games against teams that historically we haven't beaten. So what you want to do is you want to build on that, and you want to play as often as possible straight away and build from that momentum. But I suppose the positive thing, the other edge of that sword, is that we've played well whenever we've been given the chance in a sporadic period. So we've just got to keep working on our basics and make sure that we're really well drilled in that, so that when the opportunity does arrive, whenever that is, we'll be ready to hit the ground running again.
Well, that sounds like a great plan. Andy Balbirnie, the Ireland cricket captain, thanks so much for joining us. And that is all we have time for. Tara Stewart is up next.